Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to AmagiMetals.com and check them out. That's AmagiMetals.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Tuesday, April the 22nd, and I am your host, Austin Peterson, here with my co-host, Ian Hewitt. Ian, welcome back.
Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're going to talk about a topic that is very contentious, and it's the kind of thing that if you consider yourself an anti-war, or at least not necessarily the definition of a true hawk, then this is a subject that divides the libertarian community. Most people who consider themselves libertarians say, yes, absolutely, you should not have a draft, a military draft. But some people say that by having a draft policy, it would make the United States less inclined to go into war. Now, it's mostly anti-war social democrats, people who believe in big government already, that advocate this. I don't think real libertarians argue this.
Right.
But this has been a proposal that's been put on the table every single year by none other than New York's Charlie Rangel. Now, a lot of people don't give Charlie Rangel a lot of credit because of his big government schemes, his tax evasion schemes, and the fact, you know, he's been a New York Democrat for so many years. But Charlie Rangel is actually a war hero, if you didn't know that. He served in the Korean War, and I believe he won some commendations for his time in the serving in the Korean War. So when it comes to his beliefs about war and his beliefs about the draft, he's not the type of person that you can just write off as some sort of a hippie, anti-war nut who's, trying to make a point. But every single year, Charlie Rangel brings to the House floor a proposal to try and get people drafted because he thinks that that would cut down on the amount of wars that the United States is engaged in. And he thinks that it helps keep people in paying attention to what's going on in the government. He also makes lots of claims, such as the idea that it's mostly the poor people that have to go fight while the rich people, their kids, get exemptions and they don't have to go and serve.
And historically, the draft has just done a great job of fixing that problem.
Right. Well,
rich people haven't been able to find a way to exempt themselves from it.
Right. Well, in the Civil War, there was a policy that you, for $300, you could buy your way out of your draft, of your enlistment. That was a policy put in place by Abraham Lincoln before that was tossed out. But Charlie Rangel, now that women can technically, I guess they can legally serve on the front lines of combat. They can't technically serve as of yet in combat roles, but that's going to be changed very soon. I believe it's the beginning of next year that full integration of women in combat roles is supposed to begin. But Charlie Rangel now wants women to register for the Selective Service alongside men. What do you think about that, Ian?
I agree that you can't expect Rangel to be a libertarian, but his position here is as ridiculous as if a libertarian held it, because the end is to reduce the scope of government in this area, to reduce the amount of war that happens. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, when some libertarian will say some silly thing like, there's a libertarian case for raising the minimum wage. They're saying, look, if we give the government more power in this area and actually make the government bigger here, it will really ultimately make the government smaller somehow. And it's like, what? No, you doofus. When has that ever worked? That makes no sense. Oh. You could go back and look at the draft of men and say, imagine there'd been a wrangle around at the time saying, look, I'm not calling for drafting women, but we do need to draft all men to reduce the number of wars. Because then it won't just be a volunteer army. Everyone will be sending out their own sons and their own husbands, and people won't want that. That'll put a stop to this war thing. Obviously, that wouldn't have worked. The draft, of course, was in effect during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. There's nations with drafts now that have wars.
Right.
And we can even look at current examples of nations that draft women and are regularly involved in military conflict.
Yeah, Charlie Rangel says, well, reinstating the draft and requiring women to register to the Selective Service would compel the American public to have a stake in the wars we fight as a nation. Rangel says we must question why and how we go to war and who decides to send our men and women in harm's way. Now, he also has another proposal. He wants to invoke a National Universal Service Act, which would require young adults to perform 2 years of national service, either in the armed services or civilian organizations such as AmeriCorps. So the issue here is that he wants us to go to an Israeli-style policy where everyone is required to serve 2 years in the military. Although in Israel, they do have exemptions for the ultra-Orthodox. This is a major contention in the state of Israel because the ultra-Orthodox are fighting being required to serve the military or serve the government for 2 years, and I certainly can sympathize with them. I don't think I ever had a position that I felt like the draft was a good idea. It's just because I feel like you know, if you believe in self-ownership, then you should have the right to refuse to serve in the military. Think about this, you know, the Quakers historically have always been able to get exemptions from serving in the war. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I think that makes you a hero. Again, personally, I may think that if we are at war and, you know, it's something like World War II and we're fighting for national survival, for example, then I may denigrate people who don't go and serve voluntarily, but I don't believe that they should be drafted. And that's just because I believe everyone should.
And certainly that's
bodies.
Not the situation we're facing.
No,
we're not
absolutely.
Facing a situation like in World War II where we were attacked by a big, powerful alliance.
Right.
We're going and policing irrelevant conflicts.
Exactly.
And so then I support, for instance, I have a friend who's a conscientious objector and successfully withdrew from the military.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to talk about that. Boy, we could go on for a long time on this, but I want to discuss really quick Israel because the argument that they use in the case of Israel is that the survival of the nation is at stake. It's because they are a tiny nation surrounded by, I believe it's 22 hostile Arab nations, mm-hmm. and they argue that this sort of national service is a requirement in order for them to have national survival. But here's the problem. Is it really worth surviving if you give up your freedom? Like, at what point, the thing is that people talk about death, you know what I mean? Like, death would be, like, death is the worst thing ever. So, for example, we brought up the case of Edward Snowden and his recent PR propaganda tour for Vladimir Putin. And people say, well, Austin, how can you judge Edward Snowden for giving in to Putin and becoming his puppet? Because, you know what, sometimes death is actually not as bad as becoming an anti-hero, as giving up your principles. And so when I think about the state of Israel, and I think about them and their national survival, and I think about the survival of the United States, I think to myself, well, you know what, I at some point I would rather die than become a traitor or become a traitor, especially a traitor to my principles. I think I would rather die than live in a nation that forced conscripted not only our young men but also our young women. I would rather die than have to live in an unfree society and in an unfree world. Sometimes death is actually not the worst case scenario. So when people say, oh, well, look at Israel, they're looking at their national survival, and if it was came to the United States, I have to say to myself, well, you know what, I think that you turning into a sniveling coward and forcing a gun into people's faces and saying, pick up that gun and go and fight, I think that makes you a coward, as a matter of fact.
I don't categorically disagree. We might disagree about where the line is. For example, I would have preferred Snowden not go to Russia, but I'd much rather he leak this information and then flee to Russia than not leak it. I think that's an easy trade-off. Mm-hmm. In terms of Israel, you know, certainly I think we can say the draft there hasn't made Israel much less likely to be involved in a military conflict.
Absolutely.
But you might point out Israel's in a very unique situation. Mm-hmm. So we can look at another example. The nation of Chad in Africa has mandatory military service for both men and women starting at age 21. Women at least have to serve for a year starting at age 21. Last year, Chad invaded Mali. So clearly this policy has not worked in Chad.
Yeah. I a lot of people don't know that one of the Libertarians' founding fathers is Milton Friedman, who he actually played an instrumental role in defeating the military draft here in the United States, because we had one all the way up, you know, through Vietnam. But Milton Friedman, you know, he was a Nobel Prize winner for economics, but one of his major legacies for human freedom, American freedom especially, is that he was the one who sold the idea of no draft for our army. And here's, this was this great quote that Milton Friedman said. So he was debating General William Westmoreland at the time, because when General Westmoreland said that he didn't want to command, Westmoreland's like, I don't want to command an army of mercenaries. And then Milton Friedman turned around and said, would you rather command an army of slaves? And then, and Westmoreland turned around and said, I don't want our patriotic draftees called mercenaries. And then Milton Friedman turns around and says, I don't want our patriotic volunteers called mercenaries. You know what I mean? Or he goes, don't refer. Right. Westmoreland said, don't refer to them as slaves. And Milton Friedman says, don't refer to them as mercenaries.
Yeah, because if you volunteer to defend your country.
A patriotic volunteer, you're not a mercenary.
Your motives are quite different from that of a mercenary. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that, if you're a libertarian, or someone who wants to, or maybe you're even a sympathetic conservative and you find the draft to be abominable, you want to look at, you'll want to look at Milton Friedman's arguments against the draft, because he actually had some of the best arguments that you could have. Some fantastic back and forth between him and General Westmoreland. But let's get back to Charlie Rangel.
Mm-hmm.
Because he brings this up again every single year, and he makes some really outrageous claims in here about issues of social justice, right? And his Well, the draft is a social justice issue because to him, it's the poor people that go and fight and die in these wars. But this is fantastic. Now, Fox News' Chris Wallace got him on this and debated him on the issue of whether or not it was poor people who, by and large, go to serve in the wars. And he finds out that it's actually not true, that the volunteer army is actually better educated and more well-to-do than the general population. So the idea that, or the sort of push that's pushed out there, is that it's the poor people that go and die in the rich man's wars. That's not true, actually.
Well, he's right that if there were a draft, it would be easier. Oh, I mean, he's not right. In fact, if there were a draft, it would be easier for rich people to get exemptions. So really, what he is advocating for would lead to more of the problem that he's decrying. Now, as far as social justice goes, this reminds me a lot of the intra-libertarian debate over women in combat roles. An argument some libertarians made against allowing women to serve in combat is, look, creating more opportunities for women to have jobs in the military means a bigger government, means, you know, more spending, more force, and so on, because we got to pay for all that stuff. Yeah. And then the libertarian response from those who do want women to be able to serve in combat is, well, yes, I'd like to streamline the military just like everything else, but while this policy is in place, it should be equally applied. And the an important question is, well, should we apply that thinking here? If there is a draft in place, is it best for the draft to be equally applied?
Yeah.
Even though it would, you know, make the military substantially bigger and so on.
You want to hear something interesting? I actually found an inconsistency in my philosophy this morning when it came to this subject. And I think that I found my out for it. But it is, there's definitely an inconsistency with my, I guess I would call it my tactics for liberty. And it was, it's this issue shone a light on it, which I found just totally fascinating. So, for example, the question here is, you know, equality before the law. Should we, in a world where we cannot have no government and no wars and no army, if we have some army and some wars and some government, then I have to ask myself this. Do I think that there ought to be certain things that the government does to equalize everyone before the law? Absolutely. Do I think that should include women being forced to register for the draft the same way as men? Absolutely not. However, when I look at the issue of gay marriage, for example, I actually say to myself, I actually believe that if the government is paying out benefits in the form of tax breaks and things like that to married couples, then absolutely people should be able to get gay married and receive the same kinds of benefits, hospital visits, all the same sort of legal rights under the law. Now, the inconsistency is that I believe that for gay marriage, but I don't believe that for
I actually don't
war.
Think you're inconsistent.
Well, and here's
because
why.
Because one's a reduction in government.
Yes, but one is an increase in government, because to say that I believe that married couples should get the same benefits, gay people should be able to have the same benefits as married couples, is to imply a bigger government solution. However, I think that it's...
Not necessarily. What if those benefits are tax breaks? Then it's a reduction in government. Now, if we're getting into issues of religious freedom, then that's different. But I really am not troubled by the issue in and of itself of same-sex marriage being recognized by the government on paper. I don't really think...
Well, because the end isn't like more people
marriage
in the
really happens on the government level anyway. I think the government paperwork describes marriage.
Well, conservatives tend to see marriage as a social good, and there's a lot of Democrats that say the same thing too, which is why they want to extend these benefits to married couples. And they say, you know, that gay people getting married obviously is not going to be a social good because the whole point of having a marriage benefit is that they have a child, and if you have a child, you get another benefit, and then the idea is obviously for Democrats and a lot of conservatives is to expand the tax base, and gay people aren't expanding the tax base because they're not having kids. And so that's really the ultimate, it again, these are people who are big government types, you know, that's what they believe, you know. And so for me, it's simply that I believe in equality before the law, and gay people should be able to get married the same way that we should. However, I found it that it is technically an inconsistency.
I don't think it is.
Well, here's the thing.
Because
it's inconsistency in tactics.
On marriage, it isn't. Because on marriage, you're saying, look, straight couples get these tax breaks and they are subject to less regulation in terms of hospital visits and so forth. And you're saying, I think that also same-sex couples should get the same tax breaks, less taxes, and be subject to less government regulation in terms of can they visit their relatives in the hospital. So you might have more government paperwork, but the net effect is a decrease in government. Less taxes and less regulation. Whereas with the draft, for example, you're enacting more force, more government, more spending, and so on.
Okay. Now, I want to bring this up to another topic related to the draft, because Rangel insinuates that the military you'd have better troops through a draft than it has through the volunteer source. I'm reading this from the Heritage Institute, which is, you know, interesting to have a, you know, an anti-war sort of, or like anti-draft article coming from Heritage, but this is by Tim Kaine, his PhD there, and he's debunking Charlie Rangel's claims that the military would get better troops through the draft. And he says, it's difficult to see how motivation and morale would increase if the ranks were filled by random draw. And it's not the case that the current enlistees are poorly educated. That's not true. But the all-volunteer force has had immense success in drawing highly motivated individuals through better pay. And America's military leadership is actually opposed to instituting a new draft, because here's the thing. Would you rather serve next to someone who didn't want to be there, or would you rather serve next to somebody who wants to be there?
You know what's funny is if you think about that general's comments, who was debating with Friedman, and if you think about Rangel's comments here, although they sound absurd to us, they're actually consistent with the typical progressive narrative, which is you get better results when you force people to do stuff and mandate it than when people are doing it for any kind of profit motive.
Right.
Even if that profit motive is, you know, just getting your salary when you're volunteering to defend your country.
Right.
So I can see why he adopts this absurd position, and I definitely agree with Heritage's comments here.
Well, again, you know, here's the great thing about this topic is that there are, not only do we have a philosophical, like, we find this philosophically repugnant, just as libertarians, we say to ourselves, philosophically, this is wrong, you own your body, you should be able to make decisions what you do with your life, you can even, you can throw it away if you want, you can join the military if you want, that should be your decision. But there's all sorts of practical arguments against having a draft, and in terms of national security. So the arguments that anyone might choose to foist upon us regarding national security or regarding social justice, there are practical reasons for why the social justice arguments are wrong and practical reasons for why the national security arguments are wrong. And isn't that amazing, I think, that liberty actually is a practical solution? I think so often people look at liberty as some idealist sort of concept or notion. And certainly sometimes it is when the only options we have are government, like in marriage or something like that. But I think it's important to talk about the ideal, and I think it's important to understand the philosophical ideal. But what's fascinating to me are the people like Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek and Ludwig von Mises, who very much made the consequentialist argument for libertarianism. Those are the people, these are the modern examples of this would be people like Steve Horowitz, for example, people who believe in the consequentialist arguments. I just love the fact that there are real tactical, practical arguments for liberty.
I think we need to make those practical results-based arguments for our principles. I think good underlying philosophical principles are good because they produce good practical results.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. You know, we always need like our radical philosophers who are the ones who don't give a damn about the consequences of anything and aren't trying to make some sort of practical case and are simply out there making the philosophical arguments.
Well, I would say their philosophy's bad if it leads to bad results, though.
Well, here I would say that I wouldn't say their philosophy is bad. I'd say that their tactics are bad because their message isn't necessarily having any practical impact. You know, but again, we all need to be inspired by our Lysander Spooners and our Murray Rothbards and people like that who they make the philosophical case for, you know, in a perfect world, what would it be like? You know, if, you know, Lysander Spooner says one of his famous treatises he wrote, No Treason, and he talked about the Constitution is what do you know this quote from Lysander Spooner? It's a fantastic quote about the Constitution. The Constitution has either authorized our current form of government or it has been powerless to stop it. Very true. But either way, it is unfit to exist. And his argument is that the Constitution has either authorized the government that we have, mm-hmm. or it hasn't been able, it's been powerless to stop it.
That's
He's
true.
Right.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right.
I agree.
And so, but I still consider myself a constitutionalist.
Well, I do, because if we did adhere to the Constitution, it'd be a huge step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I don't accept the good in theory, bad in practice dichotomy. If mm-hmm. something is bad in practice, it's a bad theory.
Well, let me counter that and toss out the first example that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. And we're getting away from the draft here, but let's see if we can circle around on it. But let's just say abortion. Abortion's a bad idea, in theory, for me. Banning it is even worse, because when you ban abortion, in practice, all of a sudden women are getting the back alley abortions. They're to have the practical effect of what I believe is that abortion should be banned, because theoretically I think you should not be killing humans. I'm against abortion, but I know that practically, if we do what I think is the right thing to do and try and ban abortions, the practical effect will result in less liberty overall. What do you say to that?
Right. I think that federal enforcement and federal control of this issue could have consequences like that, and that's why I think that in theory, federal control and enforcement of this issue is bad. It's a bad theory.
So, wait a minute. So, well, federal enforcement is one thing, and we can talk about federalism, but that you're being squishy on this one. Don't you?
No, not at all.
But don't you think that it's possible that, that sometimes the practical effects of our idealist policies could possibly result in less liberty overall?
Well, it depends on, you know, on what level are things enforced. I think the theory of centralized enforcement is a bad theory, no matter what issue we're talking about. Even something like just regular murder, I think, would be more effectively dealt with at a more decentralized level.
Well, I totally agree. And I'm curious what our fans think about this topic. You guys need to start sending us some emails. Use that button on the front page of our website. Send us your thoughts to thelibertarianrepublic.com, because we want to know what you think. We want to hear what your topics are. What do you guys think of the podcast, by the way? If you're listening to us still right now, you must be liking it, because this we've been droning on for 20, 21 minutes. Somebody wrote into us yesterday and said, hey, you know, the only thing that's wrong with your podcast is that it's not long enough.
That's a good problem to have.
That's a good
problem
to have. They want to hear us really go into depth on these topics. But you know what? So we try and keep the information dense. We try and get to the topic, stick to it, not spend too much time going off in philosophical rantigans like we did a little bit today there at the end.
Every now and then.
Every now and then we like to do that. But if that's what you guys like, why don't you just tell us? Send us an email. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. And if you like us enough, please subscribe to us on iTunes, go to Stitcher.com. Oh, and if you really love us, do us a favor. You don't have to send us money, but just do send us your email. So when you go to thelibertarianrepublic.com, fill out the pop-up that you got there with your editor's mug, and send us your email address. If you do this month, you'll be registered to win a replica of George Washington's firearm. And don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.